Hello, how are your communication skills? Do you feel comfortable with public speaking? Is your communication style an asset or a liability? Well, if you're interested in any of those topics, I welcome you to the Speech House podcast. My name is Jennifer Migon. I am a public speaking and leadership expert, and with my guest, our aim is that our conversations will help you to become the leader that you've always been. All right, relax, don't forget to subscribe, and let's get started, shall we? I'm very excited about my guest today, Hernán Choza. He's one of those people who can do it all. He's a former professional tennis player from Argentina. He's a CEO of a zinc flake coating business, and he's multiple author of great books about sport parenting. And he recently successfully launched his podcast, The Sport Youth Parenting Tribe, to help parents become better at helping their children who are playing sports. We have so many things to discuss today, and we're going to talk about his tennis career, the transition, how it is to be a CEO and a podcast host. Hernán, welcome to the Speech House podcast.
Hi, Jen. Thanks for having me today. And you know that you were one of my biggest, not fans, but helped me to launch my podcast. So, yeah, I owe you one there.
Thank you. Yes, Hernán and I actually met a few years ago during an online summit. It was called the Winning Summit, and we were both presenting. And actually, I was very impressed by his presentation because he was talking about a topic that is often overlooked, and topic is sport parents. And because we hear all the stories about crazy parents, but we never talk about the tools and how we can help these parents to become better. And Hernán has done it all. He was a player, then he became a tennis parent, and now he's helping tennis parents to become better. So we're going to talk about those things, but also about many other topics. So thank you so much for joining the podcast today, because I know it's pretty early in Buenos Aires. So thank you so much.
Yeah, it's 7 a.m., but I'm an early morning person. So, yeah, let's have the conversation.
Great. I want to start with, because this podcast is about public speaking, and when we talk about public speaking, it's being on stage. But I truly believe that in order to become a good public speaker, it starts inside. It starts about the mindset. And I want to talk about something that we discussed in our previous conversation. And when you were 13 years old, you were playing, and you had that conversation with your father, because for those who don't know, in tennis, you start pretty early, 7, 8 years old, and Hernán started to be really good at 15. So it's like 7 years, you know, where you still had to kind of find that grit. And at 13, your dad, if I recall well, told you that perhaps you should do something else, and because your sister was doing horse riding, and he suggested that perhaps you could do that as well. What was the inner dialogue that you had to tell you that, no, I'm going to continue to play tennis? I'm interested in that.
Yes, you said I was struggling with tennis. I started at 6 years old. Wow. And even though I have a good technique because I have great teachers, I was struggling with matches, you know, and when I was 13, you know, kids, someone's grows before than others, and I didn't win a match for the whole year, and I was kind of low, and my father approached me, as you said, and he said, hey, maybe you want to switch sports because you are not so successful, and he tempted me to switch to riding horses because my sister was really good at it. And in fact, I really do love tennis, you know. I love being at the World Hours playing some mental matches between my idols, Ivan Lendl, John McEnroe. So I love the sports, and I continue grinding. And as you said, at 15, there was a big shift in my game. But the big shift was because I started training different. I overcome every guy that was there on the court. And when you do something all the time and you repeat the certain things, you get some confidence. And I perform a 2-month training, 1 month at Nick Bollettieri's and the other month at Tandil's Academy, where Del Potro came from. In my first tournament, I make it to the Nationals. And that wasn't magic. It was the love for the game and the right training and the right coaching. So I developed some grit that when you are young and you win all the time, maybe it's usual for you. But when you struggle in your youth and you start winning, you don't want to lose that feeling anymore, you know. So you develop an extra grit.
That's great. I wanted to really start with that story, and you mentioned grit, because we also talk to entrepreneurs, and I thought it was a perfect analogy, because for the people who are not familiar with the tennis world, you have to understand not winning a match for a year is about perhaps playing 50, 60, even sometimes more matches, and losing every time, it takes a pretty toll on you. So it's, for me, it was very inspiring, because it reminds entrepreneurs to do two things: persevere. And also, you said something very interesting about changing the way you were training, being able to, in that perseverance, not to continue doing the same thing, and to change your perspective, your way of training. So iteration is very important in the world of entrepreneurship. So that's why I wanted to start with that story, and I think it was pretty good. Continuing on your tennis career and the transition, I wanted to ask you when you were playing on tour, because you made it to pretty far. You were between 200 and 300 ranked in the world, which is amazing level. And you retired early on 2021. And I want to ask you, was there a moment, a conversation again, that made you decide to retire at such a pretty young age?
There were a couple of things, you know, because in the 90s, all the good guys were very young. Chang was winning French Open at 17, Villander also. So if you were 18 or 19 and you were in top 100, you were failing. So that was a big toll. And the other thing that I realized is that I lack some tools, because, you know, there are different kind of tournaments. You have futures, challengers, and ATPs. And I was doing right okay in challengers, but when I shifted to ATP, my game lacked some things, you know. And I think I didn't have at that time the right coaching or the right advice to make it to the next level. You know, it's all about information, and you have to have the right one. And that conversation, inside conversation, was tough, because my father had a company. So I was playing tennis. I was not making it. He wasn't struggling, but I was the guy who has to take in charge of that company. So I quit tennis mostly because I didn't make it so young, and that moment was an important thing, and I had other things to do. Looking back, if I keep on grinding, I could make it to the 100 or can make it to the top 50, because I was very young, 20 years old, I was very young, but I didn't have the right information back then.
I love that. I love what you're saying about having the right information. And I really identify with what you say. I retired also when I was pretty young. I was 26 when I retired. And looking back, I feel the same way, that if I had better information, I would have definitely continued. And you see today, people, we see Novak Djokovic at 36 grinding and still being, you know, number one in the world, and so many people. I mean, Roger Federer retired at 40 and Serena and all those people. And I think information is so important. And whenever you're trying to do something big and more than information, I would say that the your environment, your personal environment is essential. And how important is your personal environment when you're an entrepreneur, when you are trying to become successful at something?
Well, in fact, it's an important topic that you touch, and I started taking care of my environment maybe a year ago or 2 years ago, reading some personal development things. And it's amazing how things change when you're around the right people. You are exposed to better emotions, better information. You get rid of toxic people, and you can make it to the next level. These are a usual saying that you are the average of the five people you hang out with, and that's really true. You need people that are pursuing certain goals, and they are pursuing something in life, and they are not hanging around and having parties. And yeah, for me, it's very important, the people that I hang out with, and I am always searching for better people, people who inspires me, as you say, Djokovic. He's 36, and he's fine-tuned every aspect of his game, his mental game. And talking about the mental game, that was information I lacked when I used to play. And I was very concerned about my technique, and the mind game is 99% of the game.
I agree. I definitely agree. I think that for me, it was a bit reverse. I was very aware of my mental game was my strength, but I was also over-focused on my technique, because I think, and it's not to find excuses, but I think having people always talking about your technique sometimes gets in the way. And I always say that when I was, because I grew up in France, and where we're focused on technique, when I was in the US, nobody cared about technique. They were like, okay, this is the objective. And the goal is that you go there. And I think in general, it's very important sometimes to say, okay, I have an objective, and to take actions instead of trying to do things perfectly. I mean, if we are being completely honest, before we started recording, I was telling you how nervous I was because I wanted everything to be perfect. And you were just like, well, hey, we're just recording, you know, we can always edit. And it really helped, because I think that sometimes we get confused. And speaking about environment, you say about finding better people. I want to discuss for entrepreneurs who are listening, or everyone who's trying to do something, what are the conversations that you need to have, especially when you are with your family, close members? Because it's easy to get rid of people that you're not living with. But what are some of the, you think, conversations that you need to have with your partner, with your parents, when you're trying to do something and that you see that they might get in the way?
Well, in fact, I have a personal story. My family is my wife and my two kids. And the family that I have is the one I choose, not my father or my mother. Unfortunately, my mother passed away 30 years ago, and I had a tough relationship with my father, you know, always micromanaging me. And you know, with that kind of message that he scared myself, if this didn't happen, you're going to lose that or that. So I have to cut that cord, you know. And it was a tough call, but you have to take a decision and choosing yourself against a pushy parent or a tough parent. And regarding my family, it's the family that I choose, not the family that I come from. And with my kids, I have a great relationship. It wasn't always that way, because I had the parenthood model that I heir. So I have to switch it. And fortunately, 5-10 years ago, when I started with all this parenting thing, I have to work on myself. So it was a good thing for them and for me. Now I can play tennis with them a couple of times a week. And I know that I have to have my mouth shut and I have to put the ball in certain places. It's different with each one, you know. With the younger, I have to put the ball near him because he doesn't want to run. And with the other guy, I have to keep my mouth more shut. But we have to adapt to our kids. They aren't going to adapt to us. So that's a big lesson.
One of the things that really impresses me with you is that because you mentioned about, you know, you in a very humble way your journey, but I really want to take some time to talk about that and to dive into it, because you started that journey because you became a tennis parent. And although you played, you made some of the mistake, and I'm saying that because you've been very vocal and open about it. And do you want to share your journey or how it was to become a tennis parent and some of the mistakes that you made and how you did that switch?
Well, my two kids started playing tennis very young because they watched me play, you know. And the elder one was really good, and when he was 4, he was already serving. And at that moment, I thought that I had a start at home, but I didn't realize back then that he was modeling my serve. And what happened in my case, I start putting all the coins in the elder one and leaving behind the younger one. And as you said, we started playing tennis. I was highly focused on his technique, you know, and he has a pretty clean one. The main mistake is that I didn't let him, Julian, make mistakes, you know. I was there all the time, and you have to let your kids experience by themselves. As you said, I make plenty of errors, and I don't regret them. I learn from them. And the key point was when Julian quit tennis at 15, because you don't realize that you're doing it wrong, but because no one tells you how to behave. And when he quit tennis, I start thinking, well, okay, I have to change. Maybe this parenting model is wrong, and I have to look inward. And I start doing an inward job, you know, questioning myself and thinking when I have to say something to them and when to shut my mouth. It was a process, and I am learning every day, because every day you have the chance to add to their life or to subtract with everything you say. So with all this thing about sports parenting, I have to be really aware, because you can't behave differently about what you preach, you know. So I have to be the best model, and that's a big thing to do every day.
I love it. And what are the things that you should never tell your children, or even someone close to you who's trying to achieve something? What are the sentences that sometimes we don't even realize that you think are big no-nos and that you should never tell someone who's trying to accomplish something?
You know, this is something that happened with my father, that even though I win an incredible match, he focused on the negative. And that's a big thing to avoid, that I did, because I had it from my father. And it happened to me nowadays that maybe my wife we had a conversation, and in 10 items, 9 I'm 100%, and in 1 I just fail, and she focuses on that. And in fact, I'm recalling my youth with my father, you know, and that's a big thing. Focus on the positive, avoid the negative, and that's the main thing. And the other thing is that you have to let them experience different things, because when they are kids, they don't know exactly what they want to do. So maybe they can try swimming, they can try tennis, or they can try different things. And we think as parents that there's a right path. And maybe what we think is right for them is not the best thing for them. So we have to let them experience life.
I love this. And when you mentioned that story with your father, it actually reminded me of a famous French soccer player, Thierry Henry, and said actually that story. And it became kind of a running gag on internet because he talks about, there was another player asking, why did you get that mentality? Because it seems that when he was scoring goals, he never looked happy. And then he goes, I was 12 years old. I went to play a match and I scored 6 goals. We won 6-0. And all the way on the drive home, my dad talked about all the mistakes. And he was like, that shaped me. That, and you can see in his personality that it seems always, it was always seems like he was angry. It was like, that was a defining moment. You can achieve great things, but at the same time, you like you said, you want to make sure that you focus on the positive, because you can build yourself in the negative as he did, but it's an exceptional case. In most cases, these kind of tend to destroy people. That's why I really like what you said. And in terms of exploring, I believe that this is a question that for me is very important, because you mentioned that, okay, some kids can do other sports and sometimes we are very focused as parents. Do you believe that people, athletes or entrepreneurs should have other interests?
Yeah, of course. When I was playing, it was all about tennis, and all the guys were 100% in the sport, because we have the model of Guillermo Vilas that he trained 8 hours a day, and we have that very reliable model for him. But nowadays, I think it's better to have another interests. I'm going to share a story, because next Tuesday I'm going to interview Andres Gomez, and he won the French Open in 1990. And I was doing the research, and at that time, he traveled with his wife and with his little kid. And he went to the club early mornings, and at 3 o'clock, he went to the hotel, and he spent time with the kids. And that was a different environment, you know. He wasn't 100%, and it worked for him. And I think if you have different interests, your mind is wired different. We are both fans of Djokovic, and he has many things in his mind, but when he's on the court, he's 100% there. So you have to be 100% in the place where you are performing, but having other interests is a great thing, I think.
I totally agree with you. I remember that I considered I played my best tennis when I was playing college tennis, and the reason why was because when I was playing a match, whether I won or I lost, well, I had a paper or to do next for the next day. So I didn't have time to dwell on the loss or to get overexcited. Of course, I was celebrating. And also I have friends, you know, for the first time I was part of a team. And that really changed. And we were doing, like you said, things, just going to have coffee or, you know, sometimes going to the bars and have a regular life. What was very instrumental to my success. And I grew up in that generation where, like you said, we have to be obsessed with tennis, and mm-hmm. and people tell you, coaches tell you, you have to eat, breathe, and eat tennis. And I think this is the dumbest thing ever. And I really want to say that again, that's the dumbest thing ever. Because what it does is that, especially when you're a teenager, when you do that only and you don't do anything else, when you lose and you see your friends having fun, it's the worst thing ever, because you don't understand. And actually it creates so much resentment, so much stress. And we're not telling you to go party every night, but I think it's important to have different interests, because it creates different circuits on your brain as well. And it develops your creativity, and it really helps you, I believe, in the general run. So I like that what you said. Do you have a special interest now?
Well, I have my company. I'm involved in writing books. I now launched my podcast that I have to work a lot because it's not the same being a guest than being a host. I work on my body. I realize that movement and strength is they are key for longevity. Maybe when you are a former athlete, when you quit sports, you don't do nothing anymore. You think that you did it all, but you have to work out all the time. I spend time with my wife. We have tennis in common. We laugh. I have many interests. I keep busy and I don't have any problem of being alone because I have many, many ventures, you know. So, yeah, for me, it's important. And when kids are out of home, you know, because they don't live with me anymore, you have plenty of time for yourself and you have to fill the calendar, you know. It's not so easy.
Yeah, I want to, you know, in this podcast, you will hear a lot of sport analogy because I love sports. And Zlatan Ibrahimovic once said that you can take the kid out of Rosengard, but you can't take Rosengard out of the kid. And I know that I tried when I stopped playing tennis to kind of erase that part of my life to get back to normal life. But I realized that I will always be an athlete and I will always have the athlete mentality. I want to ask you, Hernán, the CEO, what's left from the tennis player, and that how does your tennis experience help you to be a CEO, but also a podcast host of, you know, the Sport Youth Parenting Tribe? How does the tennis experience play in your life nowadays?
You know, the tennis experience is important because you develop persistence. And the other important thing, at least in tennis players, you find a way, you search for a way to solve problems. And that's great in life because sometimes kids, they get a problem and they don't search for a solution. And when you're in a game, you have to fix things and quickly. So maybe you run out of time because you lose the match, but the other day you have another match to try yourself. But other thing that I add to my business career right now, because you know, when you play tennis, it's an individual sport and you try to do it all by yourself. But nowadays I'm relying more on a team. I learn how to delegate. I learn what I have to do and what task I have to delegate to other people. And that makes us grow a lot, because when you are pushing all the time, 100% of the things, your team, it becomes weaker, you know. So it's important to have the right people, and you have to lead by example. And I have a good story because Eric Edmits is a big coach, and once I listened to him to say, if you're not in a big mood, in a great mood, don't go to the office because people are watching you. And a month ago, I have an issue with something and I wasn't in a big mood. And I stay at home. I went to the park to walk. And on Monday, I was right there just to rock it again. So it's important how you behave in front of people.
Definitely. And like you said previously and just right now about how people are watching you. And I think it is so important that we remind that, especially when we are leaders. And that's why I think that your podcast and your platform, the Sport Youth Parenting Tribe, is important because you teach people how to become role models and how to behave. What are the goals of this? Why do you do this? What is your intention with that platform? And I like to dig a bit on that.
Well, in fact, I started because one lady say yes to me if I want to interview for the podcast, and there was no way back, and I have to start, even though I didn't have all the tools. I have to learn the process, and it's not about sports parenting because I have different guests and I try to listen to what they have to say, what they have to bring to the table, even though they are sports. Next month, I have a lady that I learn English from her, and she has a worldwide program, and it's important for South American players to understand and to speak English confidently. So it's not just about sports, it's about a great guest that have something important to do, and that can leave a legacy or a way of doing things or healthy, let's say, habits or practices. There are amazing people around there, and I have an interview or a couple of interviews a week, and it's very challenging because once I finish one, I have to start with the other one, and I have to be quick, and times fly. But it's a great practice, and I keep myself trained, you know. So I don't have a goal about listeners, about downloads, about money. I don't have any advertisement on the podcast, you know. And I know all the podcasts have their followers, and they're selling some things. And it's not my role. My role is to honor the guest. That's the main thing.
Yeah, that's and you're doing it really well. I really wanna thank you for your time, and although you don't care about followers, I encourage everyone to go and listen to your podcast, because like you said, you really feel that, and I've told you that before, that you're really honoring the guest, that you respect them by doing amazing research, but also the question that you ask, you can really tell that your goal is to contribute to people and to really help them. There is no agenda here, and that's why I really encourage everyone to listen to your podcast, and so that's the sponsorship right there, even if you don't want it. And thank you so much for your time, and yes, we will talk again. I know that, and I'm very very fortunate to actually be one of your friends. I actually want to finish with one thing that Hernan and I are doing, because he said that accountability and the people that you have are so important. A few months ago, when we were connected with Hernan, we actually decided to be accountability partners. And that was something that really helped me, because I know that I have goals, but sometimes it's hard to follow up. And so we decided to just be, hey, let's have goals, and let's keep each other accountable for that. So thank you so much for keeping me in check. And he has a very gentle way of doing it when I'm like sleeping, you know. nice way of doing it. So I really want to say that it's a great thing. Like you said, that the people you have around you really do help you to become better. So I wanted to say thank you for that. Thank you for the listeners, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Well, thanks, Jen, for the conversation. I want to share the thing that we do every day, because it's important for listeners. Jennifer and I write every day in present tense, what do we want in life? It's one sheet of paper. Then we record it, and then we send it to each other. So we have our goals every day in our minds, and we are pursuing them every day with our daily actions. And things start to change when we started doing that.
It really does. And I want to also say something. And when you actually record yourself and you do it, there is this cognitive dissonance. If you're not acting the what you're writing, it starts to be in your mind, and it actually pushes you, again, in a gentle way, to take actions. And that's something that was really important to me. And then, yes, and that's why I said, okay, let's start with the podcast, because I wanted to do that. And again, thank you so much for it. And yeah, so we'll keep sending scripts to each other. If you're listening, I really encourage you to do that. So this time, for real. Thank you, Hernan. And yeah, for everyone else, we'll see you next time. Bye.
Well, Jen, thanks for everything, and keep in touch.
Bye. Thank you for listening. I hope that you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. And if you haven't done it yet, please subscribe or share this episode with someone you believe might need it. And until next time, stand tall, speak up, and share your story. The world needs it. Bye.